Hello and welcome to the Fleischmann Hiller podcast on European politics and communications. I'm Stefan Moller, digital strategist at Fleischmann in Brussels, and today I'll be asking Andrew Richet of the Personal Democracy Forum a few questions. Andrew is the founder of the Personal Democracy Forum, which is now the biggest conference globally on the impact of technology on politics. The second European Forum is taking place next month in Barcelona on October 4th and 5th, which Fleischmann is co-sponsoring. But Andrew, over to you. How did it all start?
So Personal Democracy Forum got started in 2006, actually 2005, when myself and Mika Sifri, my partner, editor, and curator, noticed that there was a great deal of interest in how technology was changing politics and how it was also starting to change the way governments were interacting with their citizens. So we launched an event in New York where we invited both Republicans and Democrats. First it was the technologists, then the party staff, then political leaders. And we discovered a couple of interesting things. First was that politicians themselves didn't know the difference between a server and a waiter. Secondly, that there was a great deal of appetite among political professionals to use the same technologies that we see in the business world applied to democracy and civic engagement. So the conference has now grown to be over 1,000 people. It's held in New York every June. Among the speakers who have spoken are people like Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, Clay Shirky, Larry Lessig, the New York Times columnist Tom Friedman, and other political leaders, writers, who are at the intersection of technology and politics. And just recently, in the last 2 years, we were invited by some of our attendees who came from Europe to start a conversation, a similar conversation in Europe. In fact, that's kind of the point, that Personal Democracy Forum isn't just an event. It's an ongoing conversation. In fact, we'd like to think of ourselves as community organizers. We know that there are different political systems, there are different systems of governance, but this technology continues to evolve and bring more people along with it. And so the implications of a connected world politically are massive and changing every day. And the conversation just can no longer be local. It really needs to be global. So Personal Democracy Forum is coming back for a second year this year to expand the conversation that we started last year in Barcelona. And we're very much looking forward to it because we discovered that the conversation actually in Europe was very different than the one in the U.S. Mm-hmm. In fact, maybe I should elaborate how. You know, in the U.S. political arena, a political campaign lasts, you know, for example, for president, last 18 months or 2 years. And a lot of the interest in the technology itself is oriented around how can I use this technology to raise money? How can I use this technology to embarrass my opponent? Or how can I use this technology to make sure that people actually go to the polls on election day and vote for me? In Europe, the conversation isn't so much about the political use of the technology, because the elections are much shorter. The politics aren't really candidate-driven, they're party-driven. So what we discovered was that people were interested in this technology from two perspectives. One was, how can we use this technology to encourage the government to deliver the services that we are entitled to receive, which is a decidedly kind of socialist perspective. And secondly, can this technology help build a European Union, or should it? And there was a lot of argument about that. So 15 countries were represented, bloggers, the new media directors of all the major government offices of Germany, France, England, Spain, Italy, we are coming back this year, expanding the conversation to include some folks from Eastern Europe and a new set of speakers from the United States that we think can help expand the conversation in Europe to beyond just the technology for European purposes, but also how does it relate, how does what's going on in Europe relate to what else is going on in the world? So an example of that is where we're fortunate to have Alec Ross, who is the Undersecretary for Strategy for Technology Strategy for Hillary Clinton, and is the one who has coined the term 21st century diplomacy, and also gained some fame earlier this year in relation to some of the ways in which the State Department facilitated making sure that tweets and videos out of Iran were made visible around the world. He'll be coming to speak and giving his perspective on how the U.S. government is deploying technology and interacting with technology and dealing with the criticisms that come from many people who believe that this technology in the hands of government is more dangerous than we realize. We're optimistic that the initial idea of Personal Democracy Forum has taken hold as strongly as it did in the U.S. 8 years ago here in Europe. And we're also happy to report that as a result of last year's conference, we were invited by Telefonica, who was present with us in Barcelona last year, to open another conference in Latin America. So in November, on the 18th and 19th, we are inaugurating Personal Democracy Forum Latin America to, in effect, open the conversation there as well, and as we discovered with Europe, not to be presumptive about how people are using the technology, not to be a group of Americans arriving saying, this technology is wonderful and great, please use it, but more suggesting to people that, or informing people that we've discovered that it's being used in interesting ways in our country and now in Europe. And we're curious if they're finding the same thing. And if so, is it different? How is it different? Why is it different? Can we participate in a much larger discussion? So I suspect, you know, kind of wrap on where we are going and where we are, who we are and where we're going is that I suspect that over the next 4 or 5 years, we may expand this conversation beyond three continents and move to Asia and for the Aussies out there, to Australia as well.
Based on your experience last year and since, do you see any issues or stumbling blocks to citizen involvement and we governments and the like? Given the dynamics of European politics and the different political cultures within Europe, multiple languages, the existence of the EU in addition to national governments and so forth?
Well, of course, there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of argument. People said if there was going to be a European Union online, the language that's going to exist is going to be English. And so there's obviously some local resentment about that fact. I'm not quite sure that has anything to do with us, per se, or the internet even. Those issues remain. But one thing that I think is important to note here is that politics is just one piece of the puzzle. You know, there's definitely a role for technology in the political arena. In Europe, as I mentioned earlier, it's more of a party system. The elections are shorter. In fact, in the most recent British elections, the internet almost had no impact. Television actually had a bigger impact because they did their first televised debates. So we actually believe that the bigger opportunity in Europe is not around political use of technology, but rather the potential of something that we call we government, as opposed to e-government. So let me kind of explain that. So e-government or Gov 2.0 is, in effect, government agencies, wherever they may be, using the tools of technology to deliver the services that we expect them to deliver, whether it's paying your taxes or, you know, registering your car, or getting your driver's license, checking your social security. These are the kinds of services that normally, you know, governments provide, and schedules of trains and buses. Those are the kinds of things that are now moving online, and in some ways, in very provocative ways. In some cities, buses will text people when they're coming, for example. And that's proceeding at various levels of speed throughout Europe. And it's also happening in other parts of the world. But we government is really a hybrid where citizens are taking government data, which is now being made available in searchable formats more and more, exemplified most recently by the Obama administration that put out something like 270,000 sets of data in an open way. And taking that information and mashing it or mixing it with information that the public has collected from other sources in the public arena, and where people are building tools and platforms that are useful for people in their civic lives. And in many cases, they're doing it faster and better than government can do it themselves. A perfect example of this is a site in the U.S. called See Click Fix, and a similar site in Great Britain called Fix My Street, where citizens can take pictures of potholes, broken infrastructure, do it with their cell phone, send it in, post on a Google map, and it makes it very easy to sort of identify where the problems are. And now cities in the United States, for example, are starting to use those maps in order to be able to deploy resources. I always like to give an example of a great app that we have in New York called CabSense, which, depending upon the time of day, will tell you which corner you're more likely to catch a taxi based on the patterns of taxi service in New York for the last several years that have been uploaded and built into a simple app. But more importantly, expecting government to innovate by itself is sort of like expecting the music industry to innovate by itself. I'm not quite sure the music industry would have invented MP3s or iTunes if they were left to their own devices. So what we government can do is we government can challenge government agencies, let's call them bureaucracies, to either be more innovative or get out of the way. And so it's the dynamic between the two that we think is interesting. And so the subject of Personal Democracy Forum is not really, let's use this technology to win elections. The subject really is can this technology be used to create a more connected and more equitable world? Mm-hmm. Those of us who are optimistic in life think that we can. We welcome the debate that it's not easy. But as 7 billion or 8 billion people are connected around the world with devices that make the iPhone, that will make the iPhone of today look like a briefcase phone from Motorola 10 years ago, it's very clear that there are major societal changes happening in the political world, in the governmental world, and in how human beings solve problems. And that's the core subject of Personal Democracy Forum. And so we're welcoming everybody to Barcelona to participate in that conversation. Our companion blog, and we expect to be here for many years to come.
My last question is about players beyond citizens. Lots of talk has focused on connecting citizens and politics, citizen engagement, and so forth. But what about industry and business pressure groups and so on? Will they be bypassed, or do they fit the model too?
So I think it's important to think about how much the political media ecology has changed. As a first step, I can give a great example. So political opinion, in fact, even opinion about products and services, is really done by people talking to each other. And in the political realm, they do it in the most common places, around a dining room table, around a water cooler in the office, at the market, at a local bar, or at a VF, veterans home. People share their aspirations, their fears, their hopes, their opinions, and eventually consensus is formed and people go to the polls. Political parties, political candidates have been trying to influence that consensus building process for decades in the political realm, all different ways. That continued, and in 2008, 2009, 2010, it's operating very much the same way as it's had for decades in any functioning democracy. But here's where I noticed the difference. In the presidential campaign of 2008 in the United States, I was following it like everybody else, maybe more intensely from a technology perspective. And about 6 months before the election, my 83-year-old father called me up and asked me to come over to his house to help him with his email. So I, of course, went over, looking over his shoulder at the shiny Mac that I had bought him a couple of months before, taught him how to use his address book so he could do groups. And when I finished, I looked at the email that he was sending around to his friends, and the subject line was, "Watch this." And my dad was sending around a link to a Barack Obama YouTube video. Now, my dad in a previous election cycle would not have held up a sign at a rally. He wouldn't have picked up the phone and called his friends and told them who to vote for. But if he was sitting around a dining room table and the subject of politics came up, he would have offered his opinion about the candidates and how he views the political process. So here he was in one afternoon reaching the same 50 people that it would have taken him a year and a half to reach the old-fashioned way, and he was doing it one email address at a time. Mm-hmm. So that got us thinking, from a research perspective, what about the people who actually know how to send more than one email at a time or even know how to create YouTube videos? And we discovered a very interesting statistic that in the 2008 presidential campaign, there were 1.5 billion views of online video that mentioned either Obama or McCain in the title. Mm-hmm. Only 150 million, one out of 10 of those, were videos of that were produced by the campaigns or the candidates themselves. So 9 out of 10 videos that were produced that mentioned Obama and McCain were produced by citizens trying to influence each other. So I'm sort of laying the groundwork for this perspective that the speed at which public opinion, whether it's political or whether it's market-driven or product-driven, has changed dramatically. Not just incrementally, dramatically. I mean, exponentially changed. And it continues to evolve and change as you add in layers of other types of tools like SMS and Twitter and Facebook and social media of various kinds. So if you first recognize that those kinds of, that ecology has changed, then every organization needs to start thinking of itself as a media organization, not necessarily a product organization, or even a marketing organization. No endeavor can be successful in this kind of economy of abundance, information abundance, can be successful unless it recognizes that the more media you put out that you control yourself, the more likely that media will be spread by others who are interested in your product or agree with you. But if you don't produce the media, then you'll be lower in the Google ranks. Other people will produce media for you, whether that you don't control, and other people will define you. So for those interested in the political realm, that means really engaging with citizens where they are, on the platforms where they are. And for those interested in business, it also applies to that, to not only engaging where citizens are, but trusting them not as consumers, but rather as partners.
Thanks very much, Andrew.